Let's take a closer look at that Bayer case, because the deed is done. The verdict is out. The curtains are closed. Did Apple deliver and meet expectations? My next guest says there was no big revolution in yesterday's Apple announcement. Let's turn to Colorado Springs Managing Director at Charter Equity, Ed Snyder. Ed, good to have you with us again.
Pleasure to be here.
You're looking at the Apple Watch. You're not that impressed with it. Why not?
It was already expected, so it wasn't like something surprising or new. B, it's the first product Apple's announced as a major launch that did not have ready at the time of the launch itself. It suggests they're still shaking out a lot of the technical issues with it. And then ultimately, if you look at the market that this applies to right off the bat, it's pretty small subsegment of what you would do for the iPhone. And at $350, it's going to be probably a luxury purchase that won't be open to everybody. Now, the flip side of this is you've always got to give Apple some credit here. They've managed to open up markets that everybody else thought were well-defined when they entered them. So there's always that asterisk that this could change things. But the start, it didn't come out of the gate super strong, I don't think.
Is the Achilles heel to the Apple Watch the fact that if you don't own an iPhone, there's no point in buying one?
No, that's certainly going to be one of the problems with it, because the combined purchase is going to be very expensive. You have to change your existing handset if you don't have one already. You can't have a watch independently, so it complicates matters. But we kind of knew going into it that that's what you were going to have to do, because for the iWatch to be revolutionary or even impressive, it was going to have to offer functions that you can't get in a watch, and you can't put that kind of processing power in that small form factor. So we knew beforehand it was going to have to slave off the phone.
When we discussed this initially, there were questions about the price point. $350 is much higher than the $200 that we were discussing. What are the implications for margins?
Well, I mean, the margins are probably going to be superb on this phone, even with sapphire glass on it. If you understand the mechanics of what has to go into a phone like this, or the watch to do this, and how most of that processing power is going to be sitting on the phone instead, then I would think the content here is going to be relatively modest. Mostly sensors, switches, and a very relatively low power communication link to the handset itself. So at $350, they're probably going to make plenty of margin on the watch if they can actually sell any of them.
Okay, but the ones that they will sell, there's been so many concerns about the sluggish developer community lately. App development has been slowing. Does this reignite enthusiasm? We know that Apple gets 30 cents on every dollar is worth of apps sold. Would this not also be a revenue driver?
Well, I mean, it could be a revenue driver, but I mean, at first glance, it's probably going to be relatively modest here. Why? Well, first of all, you have a much smaller user base, and apps developers like to develop an app that will be widely distributed to have a better chance of selling a lot of them. So if you're selling into a smaller market, you're going to get a smaller apps development base. Secondly, you're very limited here. It's a very small screen. So you saw in the demos that they showed you that you can link to other watches and they can do, you know, all sorts of different drawings on the watch. Because they can't do a lot of text or a lot of graphics, it's too small of a screen. So the number of apps that would make any sense for a watch are going to be a much smaller subset than for the phone. So yeah, apps development, you might get a spurt in the beginning because there's some unique stuff you could do, but I think it's going to be much smaller than what you would see for the phone.
So the Apple Watch doesn't move the needle for the revenue stream until 2015. What about the Apple Pay service, Ed? I'm wondering, considering it's not going to hit the American streets until October, and then the rest of the world in mid-2015 or so. Is this a 2015 story for Apple, or is it a 2016 story?
No, it's probably more of a 2016 story, I would think. One, we don't know what kind of bugs, if they're going to have any in the systems. Let's assume that they don't have any, because Apple likes to shake that stuff out pretty well before they launch it. But even then, you're still dealing with a very narrow segment of people who could use the service, and you're still dealing with competitive. I heard you mentioning PayPal before. A lot of commerce is done on the PC itself, so you're only dealing with a commerce that's going to be done out and remotely. Yeah, there's a lot of cell phones, but not all of them have the service, and a lot of the use profile for cell phones is when you're walking and talking, not purchasing. Look at Amazon's Fire. They released a phone. We can debate about whether it's a great phone or not, but they've only sold nothing. They've sold like 100,000 phones since they released it, and that's primary function is to purchase through the Amazon site, which is huge for merchant purchasing. So the problem you're facing is that it's not clear that the use profile works really well just yet with cell phones. So I don't see how you can make a big a big splash on the revenue line until 2016 at the earliest.
As we were monitoring Twitter reaction to the Apple event, we noticed that BlackBerry had been retweeting the Apple haters. Seems a little rich for a company with 0.5% market share.
Yeah, I guess you got to go with what works. If that's all that works for them, that's fine. I don't know that I'd be retweeting anything about Apple if I was BlackBerry. Their job, any time they spent retweeting, they probably should have been off thinking about ways to get back into the market. Their channel has atrophied to such an extent that even if they release the coolest phone on earth, they probably couldn't sell enough of them to generate enough profit to reinvest in the next phone. It's exactly the problem Motorola had after they decline and fall under Ed Zander when they became a very small OEM. Got a new CEO, he stabilized it, he started working, put out some decent products, but their channel to sell that product through was so small that it was already too late. So it gets to the point in handsets where it's too little too late, and I'm afraid that's where RIM is today.
Well, 2 weeks from now, they've got that September 24th announcement. We're expecting them to show off the Passport, which is a whole different form factor for the BlackBerry. You say it's too little too late. Is this not an aspirational device?
Well, it could be, but if I started a firm and built an aspirational device, nobody would be talking about the possibilities of me dethroning anybody, because the firm, the channel, the base of users has become so small, and especially today, you just mentioned app developers. No app developer is going to spend a lot of time developing anything for the BlackBerry when they could do Android or iPhone. And if you don't have a lot of apps today, it's kind of a non-starter. So you've got... At first glance, you think, oh, cool phone. But if you study phones and the OEMs and what makes success, there are a lot of pieces of the puzzle that have to exist for you to be successful in phones. And BlackBerry doesn't have most of those now. So even if they come out with the coolest phone we've ever seen, it's still a very long shot for them to claw back to anywhere close to where they were before the decline and fall.
All right, Ed, we appreciate your time and insight. As always, we'll spend the afternoon enjoying
My
the
pleasure.
BlackBerry hate mail.
Okay, good luck.
Ed Snyder is the managing director of Charter Equity Research. He joined us from Colorado.